before we get to the podcast, I wanted to invite you to the Pipeline Conference. The theme of this year's conference will be succession at every level. The event will be held October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, Tennessee. The focus of this event will be succession all the way from senior leadership at a church to the preschool and even the parking volunteers. That means that this conference is for your whole leadership team and any volunteers who you'd like to join you. Our speakers will include John Piper, Bob Russell, H.B. Charles, Tom Rayner, and more. Again, this event is October 11 through 13 here in Nashville. We will have separate coaching days on October 11 and 13, with the main event being the 12th. These days provide your team a chance to get focused, engaged training from our team. We have early bird discounts running through July 31st, so there's still time to take advantage of these, along with our fantastic group rates if you want to bring your team. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about the event and to register your team. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and don't forget to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts before July 31st.
Welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Todd Adkins, and I'm here today with Daniel M.
Hello, hello.
As well as Art Rayner.
Good to be here.
Art has just written a new book that I know a lot of you will want to pick up. It.
Well, you'd want to pick it up, but it's really challenging.
Yeah, Daniel read it this morning before the podcast because he's an overachiever, and you know, that's how he does things. That's how he rolls. It is really good and very challenging, which is probably where half of you will check out. But it's actually called The Money Challenge, so you should know when you pick it up, it's going to be challenging.
Mm-hmm. But it was challenging in a good way, because when I was reading it this morning, it was so readable that I could get through it fast. But there are these points all throughout the book that we'll get into in this podcast that just... Man, it just went right to the heart. And I was like, okay, I know what I got to do. I know what I got to do. So I appreciate your ministry, Art, and the way that you just shared your own life and what you're doing personally in and through this book.
Well, thanks. Thanks, Daniel and Todd. And yeah, you're going to scare people from reading the book.
Tell us a little bit more about yourself and about the book. And then we're just going to have a good conversation about pastors and money.
Well, as you all said, my name's Art Rayner. I am the vice president for institutional advancement at Southeastern Seminary in Wake Forest, North Carolina, and I've been here for about 4 years. Prior to that, I was the administrative pastor, so working with the finances and human resources and communications of a church called Family Church down in West Palm Beach, Florida. Jimmy Scroggins is the senior pastor down there. And then prior to that, I was in the banking world. My initial goal out of college was to help people with their personal finances. So I studied finances in college. I got my MBA at the University of Kentucky, Go Cats. And then I pursued my doctorate in business administration after that. But God had different plans for me. I actually grew a little unsettled in the banking industry. And early one morning when I was down in I was living in Weston, Florida at the time, Jimmy Scroggins gave me a phone call and said, "Hey, Art, I know you're down here. Our church is in a little bit of a financial mess, and we need somebody to come on staff to help us turn this thing around." And his best sales pitch to me was, "Hey, I can't guarantee you that you're always going to get paid," because that was true. They had already missed two payrolls. But we're gonna have a lot of fun trying to turn this thing around and get it moving for God's kingdom. And that was exactly what I needed to hear in an odd way. It was exactly what I needed to hear. And so God used that to pull me into full-time vocational ministry. But my desire to help others and to help them with their finances didn't decrease in that moment. In fact, it actually increased as I saw the massive need the massive hurt and pain that's going on as it relates to individuals' finances within the church and of course outside of the church. You know, what we see going on in America with how people are handling their finances and the amount of debt that people that people hold right now. Did you know that if you have credit card debt, that statistics show that if you currently have credit card debt, you probably have around $16,000
in
credit card debt. That's the most recent statistic that we have, and it's just unreal.
That is
to think that the ramifications of that are significant. They're significant for all Americans, but they're very significant for those in the church, especially as it relates to aligning with God's design for them and for how to handle their finances and how to be generous with their finances.
Yeah. Well, in your story with joining Family Church and how they had missed a couple payrolls and just the whole idea of the debt that so many Americans are ridden with. When I read this one line in your book, God's formula for money is right simple. Now, pardon me?
I heard that. I heard your Canadian-ness that Americans are in.
Yeah, well, I Americans, I've had to, and Canadians, of which I am. Back to the quote, God's formula for money is simple. Give generously, save wisely, and live appropriately. You'll find the more you are seeking in his design. Now, when I read that, man, money is always, it seems to be a complicated issue. Right. Especially when you look at the debt and just look at the American debt, the Canadian debt that just, you know, the countries are going through and individual debt. So can you tease that out a little bit for us and how you see that God's formula for money is simple?
Well, throughout the Bible, of course, the Bible talks a lot about our finances and how to manage or steward finances well. And what we see in Scripture is that we're first to give. That God calls us to a lifestyle of generosity. And it's not just with our finances; it's with everything that we have, right? I mean, God's the owner of everything. He's given us everything. We're here to steward it and to use it for His purposes. Of course, in that includes our money. And so, God weaves giving and generosity throughout the Bible. He himself is a generous God. I always like to say that he leads by example when we see generosity. When he gave his son, he gave his first and his best, right? He gave out of priority, which is one of the first principles of giving. You give out of priority. Say that the second principle is you give proportionally. We see that in Scripture. And what I mean by proportionally is that those who have more give the more, and those who have less give less. Well, what do we see God doing in the Scriptures? Well, he owns everything, and so he gave something that nobody else can give. He gave his one and only son. So he gave his first and his best. He gave something that nobody else could give. He gave sacrificially. And that's obvious. And then he gave joyfully. And those four principles, to give out of priority, give proportionally, give sacrificially, and give joyfully, what we see in Scripture. Of course, that one of the tensions that we see is, and one of the questions that I get is like, well, how do I give both sacrificially and joyfully? Because sacrificially seems like it's painful.
You're right. Right.
that doesn't seem like it's fun. So how am I supposed to find joy and happiness while I'm giving sacrificially?
Yeah.
And once again, you go back to Scripture, and God leads the way in this. Isaiah 53:10 shows us that as his son was being crushed, he actually found joy in that because he was looking into eternity and he was seeing the ramifications of that sacrifice. So he had an eternal mindset, knowing that this small sacrifice, while it is painful, has great kingdom advancing ramifications. And so that's how we deal with that tension. He leads the way in it. So the first part of that, the general formula, is give. The second part, save. And then we are to live appropriately. That doesn't mean that we're to live in poverty all the time. We're not all called to live in poverty. It doesn't mean that we're not to enjoy good things, but that we are supposed to seek God out in how we live, and seek his counsel and how we steward the resources that he's put in front of us.
That's good. That's good.
What is the best financial advice you have ever been given?
Start early. One of the most important resources that we have as it relates to our financial health is time. And so I received that advice from my dad. When I was in high school, he shared with me the importance of setting up a retirement account, which is weird for a 16, 17 year old to start thinking about retirement. But I'll admit I was weird. I heeded his advice. I was the kid who worked, actually all throughout high school, not just during the summer. And so I would, set aside money in my Roth IRA. And the reason why I did that is I was taught, the power of what's called compounding. And I know y'all probably don't get into a lot of math on this show, so I'll be brief. As an example of compounding, if you have $100 and you were to invest it in some type of mutual funding, let's say you had a good year, you earned 10% on that $100. At the end of the year, you would have $110. Now, in year two, if you did not do anything else but just left it there, and let's say you had another year where you earned 10%, you wouldn't just simply earn an additional $10 like you did the year before. You'd earn an additional $11, so your total would be $121. So you earn on top of your earnings. And while that may seem small, it starting out, over time it has significant results. As an example, let's say that a high school student, as opposed to putting money toward a car or whatever they want to spend, they worked a summer job and they put $2,000 away. They're 16 years old. They put $2,000 away into a Roth IRA account. They did that for the next 2 years. So when they're 17, they put $2,000 in there. When they're 18, they put $2,000 in there. So total, they'd set aside $6,000. They put $6,000 of their own money into that account before they even stepped out of their parents' house and went to college. If from let's look at, well, I'll use the S&P, which is a S&P 500, which is an investment index. If that money, without putting anything else in there, so they just put that $6,000. If the investment results from the S&P 500 were replicated from 1966 to 2015. So that would take that teenager to age 65. That $6,000 would turn into almost $600,000.
That is crazy.
Now remember, they didn't add anything else.
That's insane.
Just the money
they let it ride.
they just put that money in and just let it go. And so that is the power of compounding. Once again, it'll seem small initially, and you may begin to think, well, it's not really doing anything. Give it time. Give it time. Remember, time is one of your most valuable resources that you have when it comes to financial help. So that was one of the big lessons that I learned very early on. My story is a little bit different than I think most who write and speak about finances. You hear a typical story of those who speak and write about finances is I made some really bad financial decisions, and it put me just, I was down on my luck, broke, all that. And those are real stories. I don't want to belittle them. But then they discovered that through that, here's how we make good decisions, and they're able to get out of it. Once again, great stories. My story is completely different. So my story is one of, I started early. I did the things that, you're supposed to do. And, you know, barring any type of catastrophic event, I have been able to get into a financially healthy place to where, once again, not just for the sake of financial health. And I think when I talk about the money challenge, my main concern is not actually somebody's financial health. That's more of a means. I'm concerned about them aligning with God's design for them, which is once again to be somebody who's generous and open-handed with all their resources. So financial health is a way to get to that point, to be more generous, to be more open-handed, and to align more with God's design for our lives. So, but my story is one of just a normal guy who just did the things that you're supposed to do. And I can say that it works. Hey, this stuff actually works. And anybody can do it. Anybody can do it. Now, I know there's those out there who are experiencing a lot of financial pain because of their decisions that they've made, or maybe even some things that are completely out of their control, medical issues that were completely out of their control. This stuff still works. And you can get out of a bad situation by aligning yourself with how the Bible teaches us to manage our finances. So for those who are starting out, it's a great book. For those who maybe have made some bad financial decisions and are struggling financially, or maybe just got hit hard with something that was completely out of their control, it's a great book to learn about financial health. But once again, it's not just about financial health. It's about aligning yourself with God's design for you to be generous as He was generous.
Yeah, what I love about that, and along those lines, I love this quote in the first few pages of your book. You say, God did not design us to be hoarders, but conduits through which His generosity flows. Putting yourself in a position where you can live generously is not always easy, but these steps will help you get there. They'll help you get to a place where your concern is not about which credit card payment to make, but which person or organization you can help. Can you tease that out a little bit more for us, please?
Yeah, well, so not only, as I've mentioned before, that the Bible weaves the story of God's generosity, and how then we're to be generous as well, whether you look at the widow's mite or the Macedonians or wherever you see God pointing out generosity and how we're to manage our resources. Oddly enough, just normal, and I'll maybe use the term secular research, shows us that as well. There's a researcher out there by the name of Elizabeth Dunn, and she's done extensive, really good research on money as it relates, and that the handling of money as it relates to our, as she would put it, our happiness. And just to summarize her findings, and I put a few of her studies in the money challenge. But to summarize her findings, basically is when we use our money for something that's beyond ourselves, we're much happier. We experience greater happiness when we give money away, when we help somebody out with our finances. One of the worst things you can do is actually buy something for yourself, as it relates to happiness. Now, she comes to her own conclusions. What I see when I read that research is she's pointing out what God, how God designed us to operate.
Yeah.
Why do we experience joy in our generosity? Well, because we're part of something that's much bigger than ourselves. We realize that we're part of God's mission. We're part of God's kingdom advancement, and that's satisfying. That it brings a sense of contentment, and joy and happiness. Knowing that we're aligning with God's design. That's how we were created to that's how we were created to work. And so I think that answered your question.
Yeah, I love it. I'm glad you brought that research in, because that was really fascinating to read some of that and how that really does reflect God's design for us to be generous. And I love that's why I love the way that's how you start, right? To give generously.
So I lay out 8 milestones in the book Eight Financial Milestones that I recommend you chase. The number one milestone is to start giving. To me, that's the very beginning of financial health. And I also end with giving, to continue to live more generously than you ever have. But to me, that the very first thing you should do if you want to pursue financial health is to get your priorities in line. And that means to start giving. And it may not be much. You may only be able to give, say, 1% of your income, but start somewhere. That's your first step, and then build over time.
So what are, there's plenty of people listening that they have student debt or, you know, car debt or fill in the blank debt. Mm-hmm. It just seems like a lot of people have a lot of debt. So for them, you know, I think that's why you suggested, hey, if you don't have your finances in order, it's really hard to give generously. Mm-hmm. But you have to start. Even if you have a ton of debt, you still need to give. So let's back up and I want to ask this question. What are some really practical ways that people can, or practical, creative, whatever ways that people can address debt or get out of debt?
Well, it starts with getting a good understanding of your financial position. So taking inventory basically of where your debts are, how much you're paying out, where your money is going. The great thing about technology is that you can just log on to your bank account and you can pretty much see where all your money is going. Like, you don't have to go back through your checkbook anymore and do all that. It's a lot simpler. So understand where your money is going. And then set up a budget. And I know people hate that word. And I'm always hesitant to even say it because I know the cringe factor that's there when you say that B word, budget. But you have to create a plan, and that's really what a budget is. It's just it's a plan on how I'm going to spend my money. And so within that budget, you obviously put you hopefully reflect your priorities, your giving, your saving, and then your living expenses. Now, mm-hmm. if you have debt, one of the more popular ways to get out of debt, I'm a big advocate of is called the snowball method. Guys like Dave Ramsey and Chris Brown and many others recommend it as well. I recommend it. Absolutely start taking steps toward getting rid of that debt. Credit card debt is what should go first, because it is, first of all, it's not attached to any type of asset, and then second of all, usually it has one of the more higher interest rates. So credit card debt is typically just crippling.
So can you tease that out a little bit? Because sometimes people say, you know, you should pay off the highest interest loans on the one hand, and other people say, hey, you should pay out your smallest loans first.
Right. Yeah. There's so you have two different, and I don't want to bore you all with this, but you have two different philosophies. You have the snowball, and then you have the avalanche method. So the snowball is that you pay off the lowest balance first.
Okay.
So you base the debt that you pay off on the balance. So if you have a $500 credit card and you have then a $1,000 credit card, the first one that you're going to go after is that $500 credit card and a credit card balance. And the reason why you do that is it builds a sense of momentum. So okay. Once again, you think about a snowball. It's rolling down a hill. It's building,
okay.
It's building momentum. It's going faster and faster and faster. And so that's the way that I recommend. Now, you do have the avalanche method, which is you take out the highest interest rate first. I've seen more success with the snowball method. Okay. That's why I recommend that.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, now I know one of the last parts of the book, you talk about this whole idea of finances and marriage and whether or not it's healthy to have a financially separate marriage. And I mean, you know, I know people who they have separate bank accounts. My wife and I have the same bank account. And I mean, just there's so many different opinions on that. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
When I was at Family Church down in South Florida, one of the one of my areas of service there was in our premarital counseling ministry. And I was brought in for a very particular topic, and that was the topic of finances. And the reason why we focused on that, at least for one Sunday, was clear. I mean, it's a major issue in marriages. If you get this wrong, then you're going to have marital stress. Statistics show us that. The statistics as it relates to divorce and separation and financial issues, they're mind-blowing and sad. And so our goal was to hopefully get the finances right before they go into marriage, at least get their understanding of how it should operate before they go into marriage. So one of the major generosity killers, that's what I call them, four generosity killers in the book, Keeping Up with the Joneses, debt, disorganization, and then a financially separate marriage. Mm. If you are not in line with your spouse as it relates to finances, you're going to struggle to live with open hands like God has commanded us to do. So some of the practical applications for that is, one, don't have separate accounts. Hmm. Don't have accounts that a spouse has no access to. And the reason why, and when I would say that to the premarital counseling class, I would see eyebrows raised. And I got a lot of questions about it, which told me that this was an issue that they were facing. I know it's an issue that a lot of people face. But a separate accounts communicates something to the other spouse.
Yeah.
One, it communicates that it's my money, not our money. It can lead to language that it's my expenses, not our expenses.
Yeah.
There's unfortunately ways to hide purchases from your spouse. So it's easier to be dishonest. It's easier to be tempted to be dishonest in the way that you're managing your finances with your spouse. Let me dive into a quick story here. When I was working at the bank, a couple was sitting in front of me. They were going through the process of applying for a mortgage. And unfortunately, I had to let them know that they were not qualified for a mortgage. And of course, they asked why. I said, "Well, you're according to your credit report, there's too many debts out there." And I just started going through the list of debts. I said, "I'm showing this, showing this, showing this, I'm showing this, I'm showing this." I hit a credit card. And I said, "There's this credit card with this balance." And I started to proceed on to the next debt. And the wife stopped me. And she said, "No, no, 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 no. That's not ours."
Wow.
And I said, "Oh." Well, it's showing that this is there. She goes, "No." She was adamant. "No, no, no. This is not ours." So my mind immediately went into, well, there's some type of fraud. There's something going on here, and they need to take care of it because it's hurting their credit. And so I started walking them through that process. Well, here's who you need to contact. The husband next to her started getting really red. And of course, I could see something that she couldn't see because both of them were sitting across the table from me. So she couldn't really see what was going on with her husband. He started getting really red, really flustered. And then he just said, "Don't worry about it, honey. Don't worry about it." And of course, her response was, "Well, yeah, I'm going to worry about it. It's showing up on our credit. They're saying that this is somebody took out a credit card in our name, and it's showing up. And he said, don't worry about it.
Wow.
And at that point, he was actually sweating a little bit.
No kidding.
And she finally looked at him, and she saw what I had been seeing this entire time. And she looked back at me and she said, we're going to leave. And she got up and walked away. He then, of course, followed her. Now, I have no idea what happened. I have no idea why that credit card was there. I never obviously received that explanation. But I can guarantee you that their marriage, at least that night, their marriage was in a different place than when they walked into the bank to meet with me. A financially separate marriage is dangerous.
Yeah.
And I understand there can be these little reasons here and there that why people want to have separate accounts. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it. Make sure that your spouse knows your spending. Make sure that you all are on the same page with your finances. If there's absolutely no way for them, so let's say it's an individual retirement account, so they can't even get on the account, make sure that they at least have the password and the account number, that they have the ability to access it, so that everybody's on the same page, and so trustworthiness can flourish in the marriage as it relates to the finances.
Good deal. Well, Art, we want to thank you again for coming on and walking through some of this stuff. It's I am as we are recording, I'm texting back and forth with my wife. I shouldn't do that. I know. But you know, we're having a conversation about like, hey, this is a book that we need to read together. Yeah. So I think it's a great book. It's a great book for an individual. It's a great book for marriages. And so honestly and truly, the best advice I've ever been given was on finances. It was a pastor who told my wife and I, hey, if your wife at some point wants even the option not to have to work, then you need to live off one income from day one. And it's going to be really tempting to, you know, have all this money sitting there. But if you do that and you're disciplined to do that, it will set you up for a lot of things. And we did that and it worked. You know, we were able to get a house earlier, where we were able to not kill ourselves when from a financial standpoint, when we started to have children. It just made things a lot easier. The other thing, we both had families that were extremely anti-debt. Mm. Now, I will say, you know, our biggest struggle now is, while both of our families are anti-debt, it's like, you know, we have kids and we're thinking about college and we're like, oh, our retirement's good, but now we have kids and how on earth are we going to pay for college is the current conversation.
Well, always recommend put your retirement first before college. Make sure that is taken care of. I tend to recommend 15%. That's a good rule of thumb. Now there's some situations where you may need to put more toward retirement, depending on your retirement goals and depending on how old you are. 15% is a good rule of thumb. Remember, it's much easier to pay for college than it is to, now it's not easy, but it's much easier than to pay for retirement. The ramifications of not saving for retirement are much more significant than not saving for college.
Yeah.
Not to say that you shouldn't. I'm a big fan of 529 plans. But there's also other options, you know, community college. There's a number of other options with college and with retirement. There's not really too many options. It's either you save and live off of that, or you just don't. You're just going to keep on working.
Yeah.
And let me. You mind me closing with a little more lighthearted story?
Yes.
That's recent. And I told you that story that happened in the bank is a kind of a bummer of a story. So this was just a couple of weeks ago. we go to a church called The Summit here at in the Raleigh-Durham area. I know you all have had J.D. Greer, who's our pastor, on before. So we were attending a Sunday morning service, and in this particular service,
I just have to say something right now. JD is an awesome person.
He is,
but on our team, Danny Franks is he is the rock star of Summit.
That's that is the word to describe him. He is a rock star.
I
agree. So we were attending our Sunday morning service, and typically our boys are in the childcare area or the kids worship time. And but this time they asked to come into the big service with us, and they wanted to. This was at their own initiative. They wanted to give. They wanted to be able to put money into. We use buckets to put money into the buckets. And so they both got into their piggy banks, and let's say both. I'm talking about my 6-year-old and my 3-year-old. My 3-year-old pulled out $4, so 4 $1 bills. I was really proud of him, excited that he wanted to give to his local church. And then my oldest son pulled out a $20 bill. Which, of course, first I was like, how does he have a $20 bill in his piggy bank? Where did that thing come from? But then second of all, I was like, wow, that's he understands math. And so he understands $20 bill is larger than a $1 bill. And so I was really proud of him. That's a lot of money for a 6-year-old to want to give to the church. So we were sitting in the service, and the time came to collect the offering. The buckets come by. My son, funny enough, had brought their own bucket, so they actually dumped their bucket of money into the bucket, which they also had some change in there, so it made this loud boom noise. So everybody heard that our sons were giving, and then the bucket, of course, then passed, and then it suddenly when that happened, it dawned on my 3-year-old that his money's not coming back. That he actually put money in the bucket, and now it's going away. And so he yells. I mean, everybody in the room could hear it. He goes, "Wait, how do we get our money back?" And of course, everybody just cracks up. And I'm like, "Yeah, I'm the guy who talks about generosity all the time, and now I have my son who's wanting to chase after the offering plate because it's his money is going away."
Oh, I love that.
So we're still working.
I thought your oldest was going to make change in the offering.
No, that would have been good, but it was enough to have my 3-year-old scream to get his money back after the offering plate had or the offering bucket had passed. So we're still working on raising our kids to understand the importance of generosity and letting the money go. So it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
Man, I love that.
Good deal. Well, it's always great to end on a high note. So thank you for listening to 5 Leadership Questions. Please leave us a rating and review.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our fall conference, October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, and to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and the early bird deadline is July 31st, so move quickly to take advantage of these discounts.